Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too.
When God made you, He had all the options put on. You are fully loaded and totally equipped.
So do this with me.
Where did we ever come up with the style of preaching we have today? There is some entertaining preaching, but not convicting preaching, and the legacy has been tragic.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go. This is Wretched Radio, bringing you the latest in celebrity news, entertainment, gossip, maybe slapping a Bible verse on it, maybe not. But because we're a Christian station, we'll say that we're giving the Christian perspective. Or do they? Harry and Meghan, commanding the attention of the American public, perhaps yours also. We would like to actually filter this story through the Bible. That's right. That is what a Christian is called upon to do. Not just pick the low-hanging fruit. That stuff is pretty obvious. Every secular program and article you're reading, they're mocking it. Oh, the poor babies. Oh, look at them on their estate. He actually has to go do royal service with his servants. Okay, that's there. That's pretty obvious stuff. But how does a Christian respond to the interview of Harry and Meghan? Let this perhaps cause us to be convicted if necessary, and to grow in an area if necessary. How did you take in the news of Harry and Meghan? Let's get convicted together, shall we? And I'll confess my guilt, because the knee-jerk response to it was based on your attitude toward Harry and Meghan, Oprah Winfrey, the royalty, how you think about Great Britain, if you like their food, you're not a fan of tea. All of those things come to bear, and you render some sort of a verdict. Here's my opinion. Here's my take on the subject. The Christian is commanded to filter even tripe, like the Oprah Winfrey interview of Harry and Meghan. I'm sorry. It just says so much about our culture that's the big story du jour. That's the biggie, man. What these people are struggling with in their world. In the meantime, there are children in cancer wards around the country, and their families are struggling to pay the bills. They're heartbroken and grieving. And most people in our culture are consumed with the plight of Harry and Meghan. But that isn't what we want to talk about. We want to filter the story through the Bible. So here's the convicting question for you and for me. When you were watching whatever level or amount it was of Harry and Meghan, can you think of one Bible verse that came to mind? One. I have to confess to you, it wasn't the first thing that came to mind. Why? Because I bring so much to bear to a story, and so do you. All of those attitudes about Great Britain, the royals, what you think about the Crown TV show, what your attitude is toward the whole system versus what we've got going on in America. You bring all of that to bear. The Christian needs to try to set all of that aside and ask the question, what does my Bible say about Harry and Meghan? Did one verse come to mind? If you are feeling convicted by that question, okay, wasn't my intention just to make you feel bad. Let us do better. Let us not go for the low-hanging fruit of our culture, making fun of them, deriding them, weighing in. She said that, but then she said, and then 2 minutes later, and then he said, and then... How's about running through the question, what does God say about this shebang? The Oprah Winfrey interview of Harry and Meghan. Here's a Bible verse that I don't think crossed the mind of anybody in this country before airing the Oprah special or after. Proverbs 18:17. Permit me to paraphrase it for you. You hear somebody's side of the story, and it sounds good, but then you hear the other side of the story, and, all of a sudden stuff isn't so clear. What is the lesson in that proverb? Well, there's many. But we need to be careful that when we just hear one side of the story, we don't render a verdict. We hear both sides of the story. Then we consider both claims, not one. Do you think any of the producers, including Oprah herself, ever stop to go, you know, hey, gang, we got a problem here. Proverbs 18:17 says that it's not good for people to just get one side of the story without hearing the other side, because they're going to render a verdict based on somebody's clearly biased opinion favoring themselves. Do you really think that we should move forward with this? Of course not. Christian, did you and I consider that? Did you and I think through, wait, what does the palace have to say about this? Did they have a defense of this? No, maybe they reached out to them. I'll confess to you, I watched 20 seconds of the thing and I only picked it up on news clips. Nevertheless, did they call out to the Queen to ask for a comment on any of this stuff? And even if the palace declined, do you think that caused them to go, oh, gang, I don't know if we can go through with this. I don't know, man. Do you think this is wise? Not a chance. And yet, you and I have a choice about receiving it. Is it even wise for me to consume this side of the story, knowing I'll never get the other side of the story? But perhaps the bigger question is, did I filter this scene through the Bible? Question number two. How many people in America, and I will ask you, including yourself, were really grieved about the damage that was done to a family? Oh, I know, there goes a billionaires or whatever strata they happen to be in. Yeah, I know, they get weighted on hand and foot. I get that. It's a family. It's human beings. It was royally trashed by Harry and Meghan. We saw two disgruntled children lashing out against parents and grandparents. And that is a song that is sung all over Western civilization that is so undermining for Christian families that we don't honor our father and mother. If any sin was being committed by Harry and Meghan, it was that. Were they honoring their father and mother when they were talking about them? One-sidedly? I don't care if it was true or false. Irrelevant. Were they honoring father and mother? When I was watching it, was I thinking, wow, are they trashing a commandment? Whoa! God is not going to bless them because there is blessing in honoring parents. That was a devastating blow to the family. And mom and dad, that is one that you need to be aware of because your kids are getting that message. It's okay to go on national TV, the highest rated program in the country, to trash those idiot parents. And you're warring against that. You need to know that. I'm going to be speaking in Nashville and in Austin, Texas at the Teach Them Diligently conference. And I'm going to be discussing teenagers and their attitude toward kids. And I'm thinking about almost sounding hysterical. You, mom and dad, you better get serious about this. The world is not playing with your kids. They are encouraging your kids to despise you, to reject your wisdom, to mock you, make fun of you, talk behind your back, or on national television, which is exactly what we saw. Church, we got to get serious about this. You talk to most parents that are good Christian parents, not perfect, good Christian parents, what they're going through with their kids. Why? Why does that have to be? Why do the teenage years have to be so tumultuous? Well, I can tell you one of the reasons, it's because of Harry and Meghan and the world that puts up with that. Did you hear any commentaries from anybody saying that was disgraceful what they did? That they were slandering people, which was another crime that was being committed on that program. They were only showing one side. They were not honoring father and mother. And they were slandering people. They were saying nasty things. For what end? Oh, yeah, money. That was tragedy number three. Tragedy number four, similar. They were selling their family for gain. They trashed loved ones while insisting on their own moral superiority. They were just shocked at how terrible those people behaved, as they go about behaving terribly to make money. Wow. There was another insight that I think happened after the fact, courtesy of one Piers Morgan. That's right, Piers Morgan, who went on his morning talk show in Great Britain, and he said the stuff that is pretty obvious for secularists. Well, she lied about this. I don't believe her any more than I believe anybody. She could read the weather report, and I think she's lying. He got fired. The Office of Communications said that was a violation of what? There is no freedom of speech. They censor it because it was considered hate speech. It made somebody feel bad. So check this out. Meghan Markle, who goes on and trashes a bunch of people and gets praised. Piers Morgan does the exact same thing. He criticized somebody's behavior and he gets trashed. What's the difference? That would be our new woke world. And Christian, if this doesn't get resolved soon and freedom of speech doesn't reign, you're going to be Piers Morgan, too. Biblical lessons. Thank you, Meghan and Harry. This is Wretched Radio. Yes, you're busy, but I suspect you could spare 2 minutes if it saved you $500 a month. Please call MediShare for 120 seconds. They will give you a quote on affordable biblical health sharing, an alternative to health insurance. $500 per month. It will take you 2 minutes to make a phone call. Call 844-34-BIBLE. 844-34-BIBLE.
Hey, thank you so much for being here at Wretched Radio today. We certainly appreciate each and every one of you who take time to tune in and listen on a daily basis. And we also appreciate each and every one of you who are gospel partners. You can partner with Wretched right now to save the lost. As a matter of fact, the more you give, the more we're always able to give away. You can give either at wretched.org/donate, or you can text the word Wretched to 44321. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
If you're one of them there Christians who wants to know that you are being a good steward with your gifts, let me commend the Masters Academy International to you. Whatever you give to this ministry, it will have a generational impact because it is training indigenous pastors to rightly pastor and preach the Word of God in local churches in 16 countries around the nations. Want to be a good steward with a great impact? Visit wretched.org/pastor. Great testimony after great testimony, courtesy of Tomorrow Clubs from Romania.
Burdened by the hopelessness surrounding her, Edith prayed for a way to bring the gospel to Chokali. Since she started in 2008, she has discipled more than 100 children in this small village, and countless lives have been changed.
Phenomenal. Please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club. $30 a month, 30 disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Millennials. Well, they have their own language. T, on fleek, shook, woke, and the list goes on. But that doesn't make them aliens, just hard to understand. And we desire to understand them. So what we did is find our very own millennial, John Forbares, and he set out on a road trip to truth to do just that. Reach the millennial generation. RoadTripToTruth.org is where you can find it. RoadTripToTruth.org.
You do not need to be an accountant to appreciate these preborn numbers. Since 2007, there's been a 500,000 pregnancy tests. 42,000 people have confessed faith in Jesus Christ, and 123,000 babies' lives were saved. Thanks to you for supporting preborn ministries, free ultrasounds, and postnatal care. You can keep those numbers growing at preborn.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 1675. German Lutheran minister Philipp Jakob Spener publishes Pia Desideria, which becomes a manifesto for pietism. While both Catholicism and Protestantism define the faith in largely communal and societal terms, pietism emphasizes the personal experience of being born again. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, no more Liberty Talk. This is Wretched Radio. Sorry, I am bound to bring you the latest celebrity news, entertainment, and information. And call it Christian, because we're going to play a song by Hillsong next. This is Wretched Radio. Hey, we have to talk about celebrity things because I dressed for the occasion. Jimmy, do you know,
yes,
do you know who gave me this tie that I'm wearing right now?
I do not know.
Oh, you will, because believe me, I'll remind you every single time I wear it.
Okay. Hi, this is Phyllis Diller. You're listening to Todd Friel, the only man in the world who wears makeup on radio.
Wait for it. It's my Phyllis Diller tie, so we're talking entertainment, baby, because I'm dressed for it. Jordan Peterson back in the news. He is one famous fellow, if you are not aware of this man, who is having a great deal of influence, mostly on young males. They seem to flock to this fellow, which tells us there really is a vacuum for male leadership. Isn't there, in fact? I'm not just the one who imagined that. Polls tell us that boys are looking for male leadership because there is a vacuum in their lives. They are looking for somebody to tell them what to do, how to act, because they're being told a lot that you as a man are supposed to basically reflect and resemble a woman. And they are not receiving any direction. So along comes a guy like Jordan Peterson who gives advice like, get up in the morning, turn around and make your bed, comb your hair, and get to work. That's the type of advice he's giving. And the kids are listening to it as if they have never heard it before. That they are suddenly being given wisdom from on high that should have been given from dad a long time ago. And so it is Jordan Peterson, a secular psychologist from Toronto, has been very effective in reaching young people with a lot of good stuff, I grant you that. It tends to be commonsensical, but his biblical views are at best terrible, infused with Jungian psychology. He even lectures on the Bible. He certainly speaks about morality, and he's not shy about talking about Jesus Christ. He found himself having some sort of physical and mental and emotional breakdown recently. It sounded, the little bit that I read, it did not sound good. And now he's back, admitting at the launch of his latest book, he's not quite himself yet. And that's important because what you're about to hear from Jordan Peterson reveals a man who is pretty emotional. In this very podcast that he just launched, that you're about to hear, he even expresses that. His emotions, they're pretty close to the surface, so please keep that in mind. As we hear what some Christians are saying is a sure sign Jordan Peterson's getting saved. He's either saved or he's really, really close. Now, let's just be theologically precise for a moment. You are either saved or you're not. You're not getting close. You either are in the family of God or you're out. Nevertheless, I understand what people are getting after. It sounds like he has some interest in these things, and he talks about Jesus, and he gets very emotive. That doesn't mean that God is convicting him of sin, righteousness, and judgment. There could be a lot of reasons for this emotive discourse on Jesus Christ. Jordan Peterson, remember, is a secular psychologist, and you are about to hear that a lot as he talks about Jesus.
The difference between those mythological gods and Christ was that there's a historical representation of his existence as well. Now you can debate whether or not that's genuine.
No, you can't. Jesus Christ actually existed. He actually walked this earth. Secularists, they even agree, yes, there was a man who walked the planet. Now, whether he did those things or not, they of course disagree with that. But nobody disagrees with the fact that Jesus Christ was an actual human being who actually walked this earth.
You can debate about whether or not he actually lived and whether there's credible objective evidence for that. But
there is.
It doesn't matter in some sense because this, well, it does, but there's a sense in which it doesn't matter because there's still a historical story. And so what you...
Hold on. This is really important to understand. And this would help us to figure out how could we help Jordan Peterson. He's about to express the difference between actual and what appears to be factual. Meaning, even if Jesus Christ didn't walk this earth, what he said, presumably, seems to work for Jordan. I like the story. I like that he embodies the ideal man. Something, by the way, that secular philosophers love to muse about. The idea of what is the actual self? Who is the real you? That, by the way, is a Jungian exploration, but that aside for a moment. Jordan Peterson is now going to express the way that he's thinking, and I don't think he's alone in this. Even if Jesus Christ didn't exist, we know he did, but nevertheless, even if he didn't, the story is so good, I'm inclined to believe it. You're going to hear him say it. My question for you is, why is his thinking fallacious?
Having the figure of Christ is an actual person who actually lived, plus a myth. And in some sense, Christ is the union of those two things. The problem is I probably believe that.
He doesn't say which one exactly. He believes that Jesus, what he said, perhaps what he did, doesn't matter if it actually happened. I like it. And it's kind of what I'm in sync with. It's what I tend to think is maybe the right way for this planet to operate. What's wrong with his thinking?
But I don't know. Okay. I'm amazed at my own belief, and I don't understand it. Because I've seen sometimes the objective world and the narrative world touch. You know, that's Jungian synchronicity.
What is he talking about? We observe the world. We think this is the way that it ultimately ought to be. Ideally, it would look like this. Enter a narrative, whether it happened or not, and it's just, it catches it. That's it. It embodies it. And in this instance, it's Jesus Christ. Jordan Peterson thinks the world ought to operate a certain way. Morals and values ought to be written in a certain form. And Jesus Christ, whether he was real or not, doesn't seem to matter entirely. What matters is, it's working for me. What's wrong with Jordan's thinking? Question two, how would you seek to help him through this confusion?
And I've seen that many times in my own life. And so in some sense, I believe it's undeniable. You know, we have a narrative sense of the world. For me, that's been the world of morality. That's the world that tells us how to act.
There it is. So Jordan has a sense of how things should be. He likes it. He sees Jesus, at least the Jesus story, and he catches, yes, Jesus is the guy who's got it. And that's working for me. See the problem?
It's real. Like, we treat it like it's real. It's not the objective world. But the narrative and the objective world touch. And the ultimate example of that, in principle, is supposed to be Christ.
How would you help this man?
But I don't know what to... that seems to me oddly plausible.
Yeah.
But I still don't know what to make of it. It's too... partly because it's too terrifying a reality to fully believe. I don't...
Wow, that's fascinating to me. It seems he'd like to believe that it's real. Not just working, it's real. But it scares him.
Even know what would happen to you if you fully believed it.
Mm-hmm.
If you believed in the story of Christ, or if you believe that history and let's say the narrative make meet.
Because when you believe that, you buy both those stories. You believe that the narrative and the objective can actually touch.
Problem number one with Jordan's thinking. He's starting with a faulty premise. He thinks this is the way the world ought to be. Jordan can't know. Jordan has an opinion. This is Jordan's preference, and Jesus seems to be aligning with it to endorse what he has already believed. In other words, Jordan has things backwards. Jesus, God, must exist for there to be true right and wrong, good and evil. I'd like to help Jordan understand that. I'm not sure, however, he'd be able to get through his 1 Corinthians 1, 2, and 3 brain, which is a brain saturated in secular thinking. in humanistic philosophies, in high-minded ideologies that have so clouded the simplicity that is in Christ, he can't see him for who he truly is. And so I'd read 1 Corinthians 1, 2, and 3 and say, Jordan, I think you're being described here. Then how would I help Jordan? I think that I'd like to press on his conscience. The reality is, Jordan, those ideals that you think are so wonderful, you have failed. You have fallen short. And the reason that you are looking for some sort of ethereal narrative is because you have a sense of justice and you have fallen short. And you need this Jesus. And the great news is he did exist. And he will save you if you will set aside all of the highfalutin thinking, become like a child, repent, and put your trust in Jesus Christ. How would you help Jordan Peterson? This is Wretched Radio.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is giving. All Christians are commanded to give, but God has given some an extra measure of generosity so that they can give generously, knowing that God will provide for them as they work to provide for the needs of the church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Welcome to the program of comfort and encouragement. Oh, hit that button. This is Wretched Radio. That's right. We're going to try to encourage you. Not exactly our spiritual gift, nevertheless, would like to offer you something that should thrill your soul if you allow yourself to be bruised a bit. That tends to be God's pattern. When you and I get scalded by a particular Bible verse or by a particular theology or attribute of God, yep, it stings a bit, but then he offers balm to not just make the pain go away, but to help us to feel better. And so it is. We would like to provide you the sting so that the balm of God's truth can actually give you joy if we do not let ourselves hurt a little bit, if we never let ourselves get convicted. If we never hear preaching that actually points a finger, and I mean literally points a finger to say, you're the man, you and I will never experience as much joy as we should. Because one thing I think we can agree on, you and I are more sinful than we realize, aren't we? And by the way, if you have not come to that conclusion yet, if you're born again, you're going to. At some point, you are going to arrive at the conclusion you are far more sinful and wicked than you ever imagined, even when you got saved. Especially if you got saved because of a big bad sin that happens a lot. You do a big naughty, and God convicts you, and you feel really terrible because you realize how bad that was, and you get saved, and you genuinely get saved. But at some point, the Lord is going to reveal to you, you're so much worse than that sin. You lack in so many areas. And he doesn't do this just to make us feel rotten. It is because he's, first of all, telling us the truth. And isn't that what we all need? Somebody to actually tell us the unvarnished truth lovingly. But he does that so he can also then heal us when we realize how sickly we are. But he also then provides a means for us to actually have joy. The Christian life is not merely about riding the line of emotions or riding the line of morality, not falling into a ditch on either side. This, by the way, excursus time, is very true of biblical counseling. Biblical counseling is not just intended to help somebody not feel bad. Biblical counseling is not designed so that people will stop doing that thing. That is not all that it is. It is, yes, indeed, about putting off, stopping that. Don't continue in those patterns. But that's not the end of biblical counseling. Put on. Stop lying. Start telling the truth. Stop being angry, start loving. Stop coveting, start being content and being generous. It's always a put off and a put on sort of affair with biblical counseling. And the way that that process happens is by us pointing people to Jesus Christ, the source and the hope of everything that they need is found in him. Biblical counseling is to turn our eyes on Jesus so that we look long in his wonderful face and that we are motivated them to become increasingly like him. That is what biblical counseling is about. And by the way, I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers a copy of Drive-By Biblical Counseling 3. That's right, 62 biblical counseling lessons before you get to work each day. Nope, you can't have it. It'll be in the store soon. Just wanted to let you know I have a copy and you don't. Let's get to a bit of bruising so that the Lord can heal us. And this is going to hurt a lot. But we are going to use the Psalm of Repetition to help us. Oh, how I wish contemporary Christian authors would take note of the balance in the Bible. You've got one psalm that is really repetitious, and it really is repetitious. This is sort of like, he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. He loves us. He loves us. He really, really loves us. Okay. Repetition can be okay, but let's keep in mind, it's one psalm out of 150. Okay, let's just remember, when we go about the business of writing our contemporary Christian music, one psalm out of 150 repeats a sentiment over and over again. And guess what it is? It is not the love of God, which can be ill-defined by virtually anybody who hears it. It's the loving kindness of God. This is Psalm 136. Sorry. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, and here it comes, for his mercy, his chesed, his loving kindness, depending on your translation, it endures forever. The loving kindness of God, it endures forever. And then the rest of the psalm for 26 verses goes on to say, this, because the love of God endures forever. This, because his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods. His mercy endures forever. To the Lord of lords, his mercy endures forever. To him who struck Egypt in their firstborn, for his mercy endures forever. With a strong hand and with an outstretched arm, for his mercy endures forever. It gives you historical facts, what God has done, to remind you his mercy endures forever. His loving kindness endures forever. We're going to follow that pattern. As you take a test to determine how prideful you are. Hey, Friel. Sounds like fun. Thanks for burying the lead. One, if you want to be well known or for people to think that you're important, you've got pride. If you desire more likes on your Facebook machine, if you look for more views so that people will know you better, congratulations. That is rooted in pride. But Jesus died for you anyway. There's our repetition. There's our balance to being revealed as being a wicked sinner, a reminder of how great God's goodness and kindness is toward us by dying for us while we were yet pride-filled sinners. Number two, if you are really, really competitive, you've got to win. Congratulations, you have pride, but Jesus died for you when you were a pride-filled sinner anyway. Are you that way? You got to win. You don't win, man. Oh. It's pride. Number three, you seek to impress people. You want people to be impressed with you, your accomplishments, or you reveal it through the clothes or the jewelry you wear. See the bling? That's because I can. Furniture you own, the house you live in, the place you live, the town. Oh, you live in that. Back when I was knee-high to a grasshopper, which I never was because we grew up in the Midwest, and we didn't talk like that. It was Bloomington, Minnesota. Oh, you live in Bloomington. And regularly, people from Bloomington would tell you they're from Bloomington. Hey, my name's Jim. I'm from Bloomington. Plebeian. That's pride. The company you work for, you got to let people know how much you make, the food you eat. Do you ever do that? Yeah, well, you know, we're foodies. Put it that way. We just like fine things because we're fine. It's pride. Reeking pride. If you take pride in your physical appearance, you want to show it off in any way, shape, or form. By the way, Jimmy, I don't want to be pride-filled.
Well, don't.
Yeah, well, I'm not, because, I mean, how could I be when I'm reading this? That'd be a little bit hypocritical of me. I don't mind telling you, I put on a shirt about a day ago, 2 days ago.
Yeah?
I looked pretty buff.
Ah.
Mrs. Friel put it in the dryer by mistake. It was, my son couldn't fit into it is what I'm trying to say. It was like, what happened to my shirt here? It actually looked like I had a muscle, but then I turned in the mirror and revealed, I don't. The point is, if you take pride in your body, it's because you have pride. You want people to know where you went to school, how much you know, who you know, what your background is. Pride! And Jesus died for you anyway. Do you smell that yet? That putrid sound, it's not because your nose doesn't work from COVID. It's you. You're smelling you. And I'm smelling me. And I should. And it's good that I do. If I remember that Jesus died for me anyway. If I just get drubbed by a list like this, I think, oh, this is Brent Detweiler who put this together. Brent Detweiler who put this together. If I just let this drub me like I'm some sort of spiritual speed bag. Okay. I'll try harder. I'll do better. I'll be more humble. And I'll let you know about it. Just so you know that I'm being more humble, I'll let you know about it. So that I don't have pride. That's not good enough. That's not Christian enough. When you and I are convicted of sin, pride or otherwise, don't stop there. Remember this good news that Jesus died for you anyway. And you have my biblical promise on this. It will not give you license to sin more. It will encourage you to sin less. When you remember you're wreaking pride and that Jesus died for you when you stank, that's the very knowledge that will humble you and will give you hope and joy and will give you correct balance about who you are and whose you are. You smell that yet? This is Wretched Radio. So, you're one of them there Christians that wants a lot of bang for your giving buck. I concur completely, and that is why I would like to commend to you the Masters Academy International. If you would like to see your giving go a long way, the Masters Academy is the vehicle that will make sure your dollar goes very, very far. They train indigenous pastors in 16 countries around the globe to rightly pastor and to rightly preach the Word of God for years, for decades. Consider the fruit that will be born from training a pastor to rightly divide the Word of truth. If you would like to get a lot of bang for your giving buck, please learn more about the Masters Academy International. Pick a country that's near and dear to your heart and give with confidence. Wretched.org/pastor.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Wretched Radio today. We always appreciate when you email us your comments, your questions, your conundrums, and even your snarks. You can do that by emailing idea@wretched.org. We always love to hear those stories and snarks and comments and conundrums, just like this email we received from Alexandra, who says, Todd, just started listening to Wretched Radio and love the heartbeat of this ministry. I have been feeling an urgency for a long time about coming persecution, and your show boldly addresses it. Just like Alexandra, send us your comments, your questions, your stories, and your conundrums. Again, you can do that by emailing idea@wretched.org, or you can call Beep Talk at 1-866-282-BEEP. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
You say Edith in Romania, they say Edith.
Burdened by the hopelessness surrounding her, Edith prayed for a way to bring the gospel to Chocale. Since she started in 2008, she has discipled more than 100 children in this small village, and countless lives have been changed.
If you have never been to Romania, permit me to draw the picture. Think poor, forsaken, dead town in the middle of nowhere. That is where the Tomorrow Clubs thrive. Kids clubs bringing the gospel to small villages. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. The church gets revitalized. And this is happening all over Eastern Europe, courtesy of the Tomorrow Clubs and you. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Clubs? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Romans was written by the Apostle Paul to the church in Rome. It is a thorough, systematic presentation of the gospel. The two major themes are sin and righteousness. Sinners are counted righteous by imputation of Christ's righteousness. If you wish to understand the gospel, the clearest, most thorough explanation is in the book of Romans. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's see if we can make you feel really terrible. I mean good. This is Wretched Radio. Brent Detweiler drubbing us, reminding us all of the ways that you and I can be pride-filled sinners. And if we let the conviction land, if we are willing to admit and agree with God, yep, we are that pride-filled, there is a great deal of joy awaiting you. Christianity is not mystical. Christianity is cognitive. It is not necessarily academic, although it can be, but Christianity is not void of thinking. And far too often, you and I fail to do the thinking necessary to have the joy that God wants us to have. Don't forget, he wants you to have joy. He doesn't want you to just be flatlined. He wants you to have joy. Why? Because he is a joy-filled God. Have you forgotten that, by the way? God is not holding his nose around you. That God is a God who takes joy in forgiving sinners because he's that good and he's that loving despite us. Have you forgotten that? Do you let yourself appreciate that? Are you willing to go through the cognitive process of arriving at the destination of joy? That is what it requires, that we think through these things. Way too often, I see these emails regularly, and I understand it. People want to know if they're actually saved because they don't feel something. They don't feel saved. I don't know what that feels like. I don't even know that anybody can describe that. But when you press somebody, they'll say, well, it's just that I know that I'm saved. Well, okay, then it's not an emotion. It's a cognitive process, which will indeed produce an emotion. You'll feel happy, if you will. You'll have joy in knowing that you are his and you cannot be snatched from his hand. But you must know it, which means we must think these things through. And that is what I'd like to endeavor to do for you, because I personally do not need this list about all of the ways that we can be pride-filled. So I will just use it to drub you, but don't stop there. Never stop with just being convicted. You should be convicted. Let's not run into the hyper-grace ditch of never feeling bad about anything because Jesus has it covered. That is wrong theology also. But I fear too many of us, because we tend to be conservative biblicists, we forget to let the good news of God's kindness seep in. I can't help but wonder if that's why, well, a fair amount of us were kind of, what's the word I'm looking for that might best describe conservative Christians who have a high view of the Bible? Crabby? Little short?
Little cagey.
A little cagey, definitely cagey. We're just not very warm. We've got the theology boxes checked, but we aren't willing to take the time to just think this through. Because we're thinking people. Christians are not mystical people. We don't just wait for the bibbidi-bobbidi-boo to happen. God wants us to think, be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind. And we so often bypass that, especially in evangelical Christianity, don't we? We go to the show, the music causes emotions to come bubbling up. But they're ginned up. We need to be thinking on truths about God, truths about ourselves, and truths about what God did for us despite ourselves. Then you are going to arrive at feelings. Bypass the intellect and your feelings. Good luck. Good luck. And way too many evangelicals, man, they're caught in that trap where they have to go to the big show to get it. You know, I just, my walk, just lacking these days. So I'm going to that conference. You know, it's down at the Metrodome. There's going to be several bands there. And, oh, it's going to be dark and loud. I'm gonna get some feelings down there. And then you leave, and God's flashlight shines on you, and you go, oh, I've kind of lost that love and feeling. I guess I gotta go to the next conference. No, you got a Bible. Open it. Read it. Think about it. Let it inflict a gash, and then let it heal you. And we'll endeavor to do that right now. Courtesy of all of the ways that you can have pride, written by Brent Detweiler. You draw attention to yourself. You like to be the center of attention. You talk more at the family functions. You command the table. You've got pride. You like to talk about yourself, your opinions, what you're thinking, the way the world runs. If you are ever deceitful, what are you doing? You're trying to protect yourself. Why? Because you can't get hurt. So you're willing to tell just a little shading of the truth. If you're ever pretentious, that you kind of build yourself up more than what you really are, it's pride. You desire recognition and praise. Watch that one. Watch it. Now, please note, there's nothing wrong with getting that. That's cool. And I think we should be encouragers for one another. Let's not put any sort of encouragement on the shelf. Barnabas was an encourager. We should be too. We should encourage one another to do what? To pursue godliness and holiness and to do good things. We encourage one another. We can also point out where we've seen a weakness in the past and now it's a strength. Wow, look at God working in you. We can be encouragers. But if you look for that and you can't get through your day unless you get an accolade or somebody recognizes you, stay-at-home mom, careful. This is really easy. I get it. You do so much. And this is a test. This really is. You do so much for everybody in the home. And you'll never get enough thanks for them. And it's really easy to start feeling like, come on, I am not appreciated. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't. That's not my point. This is an opportunity to see your heart. Why is it that you feel that you need accolades when you have already been told by God Himself, you're my beloved, and because of Jesus Christ, you're in Him and I'm pleased with you? That should be enough. Is it? At work? Do you feel like your work has been undervalued and underappreciated? Not by God, it hasn't, if you're doing it for Him. Otherwise, you have pride. Not fulfilled serving others, you do it, but it doesn't give you a buzz. You're self-sufficient. You don't need anybody. Woofta, that's pride. You're anxious about your life. Why? It's because you're not trusting God. You don't believe His promises. If you have a hard time sleeping at night because you're worried, it's because you think you've got to fix everything. That's pride. You're self-focused. You fear humans. Fear of man problem is a big pride issue. It's the core of being scared about what somebody's going to think about you if they find out that, fill in the blank, your house is messy, you can't hit that shot, you didn't make that much. Oh, it'd be so embarrassing. It's a fear of man, stemmed in pride. Do you have pride? Man, we've got boatloads of it. I'm going to blast through these. This is going to be like, this is going to feel like a speed bag. Remember, we're letting God wound us so that He can heal us and give us joy. These are all the ways that you can have pride. You're insecure. You compare yourself to others. You're a perfectionist. You're self-serving. You feel better or superior. You think highly of yourself. You give credit to yourself. You're self-righteous. You feel deserving. I deserve to have that. They don't, by the way. You're ungrateful. You know why you're ungrateful? It's because you think that you should have that stuff. I don't need to say thank you to God or to anybody else. Because it's me we're talking about here. Do you smell yourself yet? You're captive to self-pity, jealous and envious, unkind and harsh. You love to reveal your mind. You might be considered a know-it-all. You like people to know you know. It's hard to admit you don't know. You don't listen to ordinary people. After all, you've got a degree. You interrupt people because I got to say it. What I've got to say is better than what you've got to say. You don't get much out of teaching. I know this stuff. You think of others during teaching because they need it. You don't. You're not teachable. You don't admit wrongdoing. Anybody else have a little struggle with that area, the wrongdoing? You've got wrongdoing. I don't have wrongdoing. You don't welcome correction. You resent people who correct you. Okay, we're at 37. Got the point yet? And yet, Jesus died for you. Knowing about your stinking, reeking pride, he marched to a cross, knowing how pride-filled that you would be to die for you anyway. Why? Because God so loved the pride-filled world, he gave his only begotten Son to be the propitiation. Because God is love. Might I encourage you to dwell and smell your reeking pride today? And then let the balm of the gospel of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ not just make you feel not guilty, but give you joy because he is that amazing, even when I am that pride-filled. What is not to love about a God like that? Until tomorrow, go serve your King.